This is the WGTD Theater, and we are on the air in this, our 11th season and show number 96. We are broadcasting live from beautiful Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin. We are well into the season of fall, when the air takes on that slight stench of rot, as the days become shorter and darker, as death and decay slowly engulf everything around us, and maybe approaches us ourselves. And today, the WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players bring you two stories of suspense and dread. First, Sorry, Wrong Number, and then Three Skeleton Key. Our show today is adapted by Steve Brown and Michael Ulstrup and stars members from the 91.1 Players, and the show is directed by Steve Brown. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah Dumay Dunn and McTernan, Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin, and the Brown Ulstrup Performing Arts Foundation in Salem, Wisconsin. And now, huddle close to the radio and hide under a blanket as you listen to A Study in Terror by Lucille Fletcher, as a woman accidentally overhears a conversation with death and strives frantically to prevent murder from claiming an innocent victim. This is Sorry, Wrong Number.
Oh, how awful. How unspeakably awful. Operator, I've just been cut off. Well, operator, I was supposed to be calling Murray Hill 40098, but it wasn't. Some wires must have gotten crossed. I was cut into a wrong number, and I've just heard the most dreadful thing. Something about a murder. And, operator, you'll simply have to retrace that call at once. Did you hear me? That was the wrong number. And don't say you're sorry. I know it was a wrong number, and I had no business listening, but these two men, they were cold-blooded fiends, and they're going to murder somebody. Some poor innocent woman who was all alone in a house near a bridge. And we've got to stop them. We've just got to. It doesn't matter what number I was calling. This is a wrong number, and you dialed it for me. And we've got to find out what it was. Immediately. Oh, why are you so stupid? It doesn't matter what number I was calling. What time is it? Oh, I don't want the chief operator. I think it's perfectly shameful. Now look, it was obviously a case of some little slip of the finger. I told you to try. That's what I said. Just try Murray Hill 40098. For me. You dialed it, but your finger must have slipped and I was connected with some other number. And I could hear them, but they couldn't hear me. Now I simply fail to see why you couldn't make that same mistake again. On purpose. Why couldn't you try to dial Murray Hill 40098 in the same careless way? All right, dial Murray Hill 40098 only carelessly. Please. Oh, thank you. Oh, busy. I know Murray Hill 40098 is busy. Operator, you didn't try to get that wrong number at all. I asked you specifically, and all you did was dial correctly. Can't you for once forget what number I'm calling and do something for me? Well, I want to trace that call. It's my civic duty, and it's your civic duty to trace that call and apprehend those dangerous killers. And if you won't, all right, get me the chief operator. Oh, very well. Please do. Oh, all this talk, I can't make anyone understand. It takes so much time to get anyone. Oh, chief operator, I want you to trace a call. A telephone call. Immediately. I don't know where it came from or who was making it, but it's absolutely necessary that it be tracked down. Because it was about a murder that someone's planning. Cold-blooded murder of a poor innocent woman. Tonight at 11:15. Can you trace it for me? Can you track down those men? What did you say? It depends. It depends on what. Has it been disconnected? Of course it's been disconnected. That was at least 5 minutes ago, and they didn't seem to be the type that would make a long call. My name is Mrs. Stevenson. Mrs. Albert Stevenson. But listen, my telephone number is Plaza 32093. But if you go on wasting all this time, why do I want the call traced? Oh, why? Oh, no reason. I mean, I merely felt, and very strongly, that something ought to be done about it. These men sounded like killers. They're dangerous. They're going to murder this woman. 11:15 tonight. And I thought the police ought to know. No, I haven't reported it to the police. Well, no, not yet. Yes, but meanwhile... Oh, for heaven's sake. You mean to tell me I can't check this call as a private individual when there's going to be a murder without getting tied up in all this red tape? Oh, it's perfectly idiotic. I'll call the police. Oh, ridiculous. I never heard of such nonsense. Police department, I can't see why you have to go through all this business. Oh, police department, get me the police department, please. Oh, dear, do you have to dial? Can't you ring them directly? Oh, all this time wasted. Police department. Oh, this is Mrs. Stevenson. Mrs. Albert Smythe Stevenson of 5353 North Sutton Place. I'm calling to report a murder. I mean, the murder hasn't been committed yet, but I just overheard plans for it over the telephone. Over a wrong number that the operator gave me. Yes, positively. It was a perfectly definite murder. I heard their plans distinctly. Two men were talking, and they were going to murder some woman at 11:15 tonight. She lived in a house near a bridge. Are you concentrating on this? You sound sleepy. No, I can't. I told you I can't. I'm in a wheelchair. Don't you understand? Are you stupid? And there was a private patrolman on the street. He was going to go around for a beer on 2nd Avenue, and there was some third man, a client, who was paying to have this poor woman murdered. They were going to take her rings and bracelets and use a knife. Oh, well, it's unnerved me dreadfully, and I'm not well. I'm very nervous. Oh, dear. My name is Mrs. Stevenson. Mrs. Albert Stevenson. Oh, my address is 53 North Sutton Place. And that's near a bridge. The Queensboro Bridge, you know? Oh, and we have a private patrolman on our street. And 2nd Avenue is the next street. Oh, well, I was calling Murray Hill 40098. But that wasn't the number I overheard. I mean, Murray Hill 40098 is my husband's office. My husband is working late tonight, and his line was busy. And I was trying to reach him to ask him to come home. I'm an invalid, you know, in a wheelchair. And it's the maid's night out, and... Oh, you'll look into it? Well, the whole thing calls for a search, a complete and thorough search of this whole city. I'm very near the bridge, and I'm not far from 2nd Avenue. And I know I'd feel a whole lot better if you sent around a radio car to do this neighborhood at once. Oh, I don't know. Only the coincidence is so horrible. It sounds like this neighborhood. 2nd Avenue, the patrolman, the bridge. Yes, and maybe it wasn't a long-distance call I overheard. Oh, I'm all alone and very nervous. I'm in a wheelchair, you know. My maid, Eloise... She's a big girl. She weighs 200 pounds. And she's too lazy to bring up my breakfast tray. Well, it's her night out, and my husband, Albert, oh, he's crazy about me. He just adores me. Waits on me hand and foot. Scarcely left my side since I took sick 12 years ago. And now I'm in this wheelchair, and he's working it. Oh, I don't care how many other matters you have on your desk. This is not routine. It's murder, and it requires immediate attention. Oh, You idiot! Idiot, idiot, stupid, stupid! Oh, why doesn't Albert come home? Oh, why doesn't he? Hello? Hello? Oh, I'll dial the operator again. I just can't. Operator! For heaven's sake, will you ring that Murray Hill 40098 number again? I can't think what's keeping him so long. I'll try. Try. I don't see why he doesn't answer. It makes me so nervous. I can hear it. You don't have to tell me. I know it's busy. Oh, if only I could get out of this wheelchair. Just for a little while. If I could get a breath of fresh air. Or just lean out the window and see the street. Hello, Albert. Hello? 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 Oh, what's the matter with this phone? Hello? Hello? Oh. Hello? Hello, for heaven's sake. Who is this? Hello? 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 Who is this? I know you're on the line. Who's trying to call me? What are they trying to do to me? Operator? Operator. Telephone. But it's positively driving me crazy. I've never seen such an efficient, miserable service. Now look, I'm an invalid, and I'm very nervous. And I'm not supposed to be annoyed much longer. Well, everything seems to be the trouble. I haven't had one bit of satisfaction out of one call I've made this evening. The whole world could be murdered for all you people care. And now my phone keeps ringing. Ringing and ringing and ringing every 5 seconds or so. And when I pick it up, there's no one there. I don't want you to test my phone for me. I want you to put that call through, whatever it is. Oh, you can't do that? And why, may I ask? And meanwhile, I've got to sit here in my bed, suffering every time that phone rings, imagining everything. You're not trying to check the trouble for me. Oh, what's the use of talking to you? You're so stupid. But I know the dial system's automatic. Oh, young woman, I don't know your name, but there are ways of finding out. And I'm going to report you to your superiors for the most unpardonable rudeness. Oh, give me the business office at once. Dial it direct? I'll do no such thing. I don't even know the number. Oh, you... What's the use? Oh. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, for heaven's sakes. Hello. Hello, stop ringing me. Do you hear? Answer me. Who is this? Do you realize you're driving me crazy? Who's calling me? What are you doing it for? Now stop it. Stop it! Stop it, I say! If you don't stop ringing me, I'm going to call the police. Do you hear? Hello? Hello? Yes, this is Plaza 32098. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Who? Oh, Western Union, yes. This is Mrs. Albert Stevenson. Will you read the telegram, please? Yes, that's the address.
Darling. Terribly sorry. Tried to get you the last hour, but the line busy. Leaving for Boston 11 p.m. tonight on urgent business. Back tomorrow afternoon. Keep happy. Signed, Albert.
Oh. Oh, no. No. No, I don't want a copy of the message. Good night. Oh, Albert. How could you? How could you? You knew I was going to be alone. I can't be alone tonight. Well, if I'm alone one more second, I'll go mad. I don't care what he says or what the expense is. I'm a sick woman in this wheelchair. I'm entitled to a little consideration. Information? I want the telephone number of Henchley Hospital. No, I don't know the street address. It's a very small, private, exclusive hospital where I had my appendix out 2 years ago. Henchley. H-E-N-C-H-L-Y. Please hurry. And please, what is the time? Oh, for heaven's sake, I've no time to dial. What is the number of Henchley Hospital? Butterfield 39970. Is this Henchley Hospital? I want the nurse's registry. I said, I want the nurse's registry at once. I want a trained nurse. I want to hire her immediately for the night. The nature of the case is nerves. I'm very upset. I need soothing and companionship. You see, my husband is away and I'm not under a doctor's care at the moment. I was a patient in your hospital 2 years ago. And after all, I do expect to pay this person for attending me. Well, this is an emergency case and absolutely necessary. I'm a sick woman, and I'm very upset, very. Well, I'm alone in the house, and I'm an invalid. And tonight I overheard a telephone conversation that upset me dreadfully. A woman is going to be murdered when a train crosses a bridge. In fact, if someone doesn't come at once, I'm afraid I'll go out of my mind. Miss Phillips, and do you have to wait until Miss Phillips comes in? And when do you expect Miss Phillips in? She went out to supper at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock? But it's not 11 yet. Where's my clock? Oh, my clock has stopped. I thought it was running down. What time is it? 14 minutes past 11. What was that? That? Why, that click just now in my own telephone, as though someone had lifted the receiver off the hook, off the extension telephone downstairs. But I did hear it. There's someone in this house, someone downstairs in the kitchen, and they're listening to me now. There. Oh, I won't pick it up. I won't let them hear me. I'll be quiet, and they'll think. But if I don't call someone now while they're still down there, there'll be no time. Oh, I've got to get that operator. Operator, operator. I'm in desperate trouble. I don't dare speak louder. There's someone listening. Can you hear me now? But you've got to hear me. Oh, please. You've got to help me. There's someone in this house. Someone who's going to murder me. And you've got to get in touch with the... Oh, there it is. Did you hear it? He put it down. He put down the extension phone. He's coming up the stairs. Give me the police department. Give me the police. I can hear him. Hurry, hurry!
Police department. Precinct 43, Sergeant Martin speaking.
Who?
Police department, precinct 43, Sergeant Martin speaking. Did someone call the police department?
Sorry. Wrong number.
And so closes Sorry, Wrong Number, starring Miss Chris Brooks, who played the role of Mrs. Stevenson, also starring Jim McClure and Larry Rowe, and directing the show was Steve Brown. Are you tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of life of a romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Now we escape to a lonely lighthouse off the streaming jungle coast of French Guiana on the nightmare world of terror and violence as we bring you George Tudeau's Three Skeleton Key.
Picture this place, a gray tapering cylinder welded by iron rods and concrete to the key itself. A bare black rock, 153 long, maybe 40 wide. That's at low tide. At high tide, just the lighthouse, rising 110 feet straight up out of the ocean, and all about it in the churning water, gray, green, scum-dappled, warm as soup, and swarming with gigantic bat-like devilfish, eight violet schools of Portuguese men of war, and yes, sharks, the big ones, the 15-footers. And as if this weren't enough, there was a hot, dank, rotten-smelling wind that came at us day and night off the jungle swamps of the mainland. A wind that smelled like death. A wind that had smelled the slow and frightful death that came one night to this bare black rock. Set in the base of the light was its watertight bronze door. And in you went, and up, yes, up and up and round past the tanks of oil and the coils of rope, casks of wicks and racks of lanterns, sacks of spuds and cartons and cans, and up and round, over the light storeroom was the food storeroom, and over the food storeroom was the bunk where the three of us slept, and over the bunk room was the living and cooking room, and over the living and cooking room was the light. She was a beauty, big steel and bronze baby with the sun gleaming through the glass walls all about, bouncing blinding little beams off the big shiny reflectors, glittering and refracting through her lenses. The whole gigantic bulk of her balanced like a ballerina on the glistening steel axle of her rotary mechanism. She was a sweetheart of a light. And at night, you'd lie there on the stone deck of the gallery with her revolving smoothly and quietly over your head, easing her bright white eye 360 degrees around the horizon. You'd lie there watching to see that the feeders kept working, that everything ran right, and it wouldn't be bad. The other two fellows snoring in their sacks two levels down, you'd smoke your pipe to kill the stink of the wind, and it wouldn't be bad. Louis, he was head man, was a big fellow from the Basque country. Black beard, little hard black eyes, and a pair of arms. I tell you, those arms were as big around as my legs. Yes, head man he was, and what word he let go was law. A silent fellow, and although I spent my first 2 weeks trying to strike up a real conversation, the most I could ever get out of him was,
John, I took up this profession because I do not like people. They'd want to talk too much. It's quiet work, light tending. Let's keep it that way. You're getting to be as bad as a goose. I thought maybe for once they would send me somebody who could keep his mouth shut.
That was Louis. When he accused me of becoming like Auguste, I quieted down because Auguste was the talkingest man I'd ever met. The talkingest and the ugliest. He was hunchback, stood 4 feet high, and had red hair and big blue eyes. It seems he'd been an actor in Paris.
Yes, yes, indeed! Played in over 200 different productions, dear boy. At the Grand Guignol. Oh, but it was monstrous horrible the way we used to scare the audiences. I was hated, yes, yes. They used to throw things and hiss and bare their teeth at me. Funny, it got too bad. I couldn't stand it any longer. I gave up the theater. My nerves, you understand? Yes, gave it up completely. I really did. Couldn't stand it any longer.
It all started one morning at 2:30. I was on watch, lying on the cool stone deck, pulling on my pipe, staring out at the blackness, the phosphorescent combers and big yellow stars, when, out of the corner of my eye, I noticed something show up for a second, something the light had touched far off. I waited for her to come around again, and when she did, there it was, a three-master, a big one, about a half mile off and coming down out of the north-northwest, coming straight for us. You must understand, our light was where it was for a very good reason. Dangerous submerged reefs surrounded us, and ships kept clear, but this one, the sailing vessel, was coming straight on. I went over to the gallery door and yelled,
"Eh! Louis!"
Couldn't understand it. I waited for the light to come around again.
"What is it?"
"Ship! Headed for the reef!"
"Coming right up!"
I had the glasses out now. I couldn't read her name, but I could see her quite plainly. All sails set, and the foam creaming away under her bow. Her beautiful lines. A Dutch ship, I guessed her. But why didn't she turn? Every time it passed, our light hit her with the light of day.
"Ship? Where?"
"North-northwest. The light will touch her in a moment."
Can't they see?
"Look at her. She just keeps coming on."
"Yes, the squarehead."
"What is it? What is it?"
"Watch north-northwest."
I know what it is."
What?"
"The Dutchman. The Flying Dutchman. We did a play about her once. Oh, what a performance. You ghastly guardian, hag-ridden, curse-ridden."
"Shut up, will you? She's lofting."
"Yes."
"Sloppy way to come about. She's derelict, that's it."
"Derelict?"
"Abandoned. The crew left it for some reason or other. But instead of sinking, she's gone on, running before every wind."
"She'll not run long, not with these reefs to break her up.
Beautiful ship. Now why would men leave a beautiful ship like that?
She didn't ram us, although we all expected it. But as we waited for the crash, she left again. Caught some odd gust and went about. We watched her the rest of those black hours, heeling and rocking, pushed and pulled by every current, every stray wind. Watched her until the dawn came, till the sea turned from black to a pearly gray. And on she came again, heading for us. We all had our glasses trained on her now.
Auguste, you can kill the light.
Right, Chief?
She doesn't look so good by daylight. Think she'll ground this time?
What?
I say, do you think she'll ground this time?
That is impossible. Absolutely impossible.
What?
Take my glasses. They're better than yours.
All right. What is it you're... I had to focus. And then my breath froze in my throat. The decks were swarming with a dark brown carpet that looked like a gigantic fungus, but undulating. And on the masts and yards, the guys and all were hundreds, no, thousands, no... But I don't even know. An endless number of enormous rats.
See them?
Yes, I see them.
Now we know why she's derelict.
Yes, now we know.
What are you two doing? Here, give me a look.
Yes, give him the glasses. Take a good look, Chatterbox. This gives you something to talk about.
She's still heading for us.
Yes.
She's going to turn. She better turn soon.
Suppose she doesn't.
You mean suppose she piles up on the quay?
It's low tide.
Yes, yes it is.
Where's all the conversation, Auguste? Huh? Here, want the glasses again? You want another look?
No, no!
She's still coming on.
Go away! Go away!
Turn, will you turn? I pray you turn!
She's cracking up.
The rats! Look at the water! Like a comet!
They're swimming.
Sure they are swimming. Those are ship rats.
But they're swimming for the rocks.
The door below, it's open.
Come on. Down we went, racing down the stone stairs, taking them three and four at a time. Scared? You bet we were scared.
Ghost! You get the windows. Maybe they can climb. We don't know.
Right, Chief, but hurry, hurry!
Look, see them?
No. Oh, yes, I do, up at the other end of the rock.
Look at them.
Millions!
They smell us. Here they come. Close the door.
Can't. It's stuck.
Let me.
Made it.
That was close.
One got in. Look, there.
Get him!
He was as big as a tomcat. Bigger. His eyes were wild and red. His teeth long and sharp and yellow. He went for us, starved and ravenous. And we fought him, fought that one rat all over the room. It was, oh, believe me, I do not exaggerate. It was like fighting a panther. We better get aloft. As we ran up the winding staircase, we passed the tiny windows at the various levels in it. Every one was a thick, raving, screaming curtain of brown fur. I was ahead of Louis, and I dreaded each successive level. Suppose they had found a way in.
Look at them! Will you look at them?
It is a nightmare.
Will you look at them?
The air of the gallery was thick and fetid with the stink of them. The light was dim, brown, filtered through the crawling mass that swarmed over the glass all about us. We could not see the sky. Nothing. Nothing but them, their red eyes, their claws, their wriggling, hairy snouts, their teeth, the rats. They screamed and howled and threw themselves against the glass. They were starving. And we three, we stood very quietly, very, very quietly in the center of the glass room under our beautiful light, and we waited.
What can we do? What can we do?
Take it easy, old man. Take it easy.
I can't.
It won't do any good to stand here and shake.
Yeah, that's right. Anybody want a cigarette?
Yes, I have one. Thank you.
Good boy. We've got to keep calm about this thing. Here's the light.
Don't have the fire, do they?
Guess not.
Give me another match. You don't like that much. Turn the lights on.
Don't rile them, Auguste.
Give me some more matches. I'll strike them and strike them and strike them until they get scared and go away.
They won't go away. Not until...
Finish it, Chief. Not until what?
Not until they have been fed.
You can take just so much horror and then you can get used to it. And they were interesting to watch, you know. They couldn't understand the glass. They could see us. They could rush at us. But that thin, invisible barrier held them off, stopped them. From time to time, we caught a glimpse of the rocks below. More rats down there, swarming brown velvet in the bright tropical sunlight. And then the tide began to rise. If only to drown some of them.
Ship's rats don't drown, no, sir. You cannot drown one of them. They're all climbing up the tower.
This bunch around us is getting thicker.
Yeah. Say, what's the time?
6:15.
You've got first watch, John.
Right.
Wake me at 10.
I will.
Come along, August.
It was getting dark. One side of the room was lit in a salt-filtered red. Sunset through the rats. Oh, very pretty. I set the weights, checked my fuel, and then lit the lamp. It caught them, lit them in their gigantic wriggling web of pale hairless bellies, twitching red tails, bright eyes. And then I started the rotary mechanism. The light drove them mad as she swung slowly and smoothly about. It blinded them in the fierce, stabbing bar of light, moving continually about, ever turning, ever touching, ever moving around and around. And they, twisting and stuttering, eyes flaming when they were struck by the light, bright light moving and behind, on the dark side of the room, so close I did not turn my back. You cannot help turning your back when you're in a room made of glass. On the dark side of the room, you could not see them, only their eyes. Thousands of points of blank red light, blinking, twinkling like the stars of hell. Louis relieved me at 10, but I didn't get much sleep that night. And when I came into the gallery early next morning, there stood Auguste, his back to me. He was bowing to the rats, waving his arms and making a speech.
My dear audience, I am going to play once again that magnificent role which made me the toast of the Paris Theater, an evil genius of the medieval underworld. I am he who did guide the dark soul of men into the nether parts. Did not be frightened, little Timmy. I was not at you.
I stood staring at him, horror-struck, but he didn't notice me. The man had gone mad. He kept turning, telling his stories to all the rats, leaving no one out. August! August!
Ah, another one, a latecomer. Take a seat on the aisle, dear patron.
August, stop it. Stop it.
Move over there. Let the gentleman be seated.
But he didn't stop. He went on, bowing and scraping to the rats, his big blue eyes rolling and winking, his wild red hair waving about him. I grabbed him by the arms, slapped his face. He looked at me like a child, and then his face screwed up. He looked as though he were about to cry. Go below. Go on.
Very well. Later, my dear audience. Later. Matinee today.
Sure, he was crazy. But I guess we all were. A few hours later, he came back up and caught Louis and me teasing the rats. Yes, sounds horrible. It was fun. We would get up right against the glass and make faces at them. It drove them crazy. They would scratch away, trying to get at our eyes. Louis was even cuter about it. He'd pull a piece of bread out of his pocket, press it against the glass. The rats would scramble into a salad ball, biting each other, clustering like grapes. From time to time, a whole knot of them would slip and fall the 110 feet to the surf below.
Look at the sharks.
They're eating them.
Yeah, the sharks are our friends. Here, here, I'll get another bunch together. Here, my beauties, that's it. Pile up, kill each other. There they go.
Auguste joined in too. Oh, very genius, Auguste. He learned that if he spread-eagled himself against the glass, they'd bunch and bundle against his figure. Then he'd leap back.
The portrait in rats.
It went on all day. And then I was lying in bed. It was about midnight. I was very tired, and I was just beginning to fall off to sleep when I became conscious of a new sound. Couldn't figure it at first. I got up, lit the lamp, and went to the window. Even as I looked at it, I saw one of the panes begin to sag in. They had eaten the wood away. Louis! Louis! Come quick!
What is it?
They found a way in. I held the glass in my hand. Now they were all going crazy and, assured of the success of this maneuver, were all nibbling away at the wood. Louis ran below and then returned with a large sheet of tin. We spread it against the window and hammered it into place. Even as we did so, we felt the heavy bodies thudding against the outer side of the window give way.
That ought to hold. If it doesn't, it's done for.
Rats can't eat tin?
No, they can't.
What was that?
I don't know. It came from below.
The storeroom window.
They're in. They're swarming up the stairs.
Drop a trap.
Right.
Two of them got in.
Let's go after them.
We didn't have to go after them. They came at us. I leaped to one side and grabbed the marlin spike, swung, and smashed one in midair. I whirled to see Louis with the other. It had ripped his hand open, and the blood was pouring all over the place. He held his hand aloft and kicked at the snarling rat. I stepped and swung and got him.
My hand! He got my hand!
That's both of them, Louis. I'll get you something to tie that up.
Blood! Look at it! My blood! I'm bleeding!
Now, don't worry about that, Louis. Here, look, I wound this kerchief around it. It'll be okay.
Blood!
Yeah, now, it's not so bad. It's just a flesh... And I became conscious of another new sound. They were gnawing their way through the wooden trap door. I watched the wood, fascinated. And even as I did, it began to give way. A bristling, whiskery nose showed through. Louis? Louis, we've got to go up. Next level was the living quarters in the kitchen. I slammed the trap door there, too. But it, too, was wood.
My blood. What are we going to do?
I don't know, but we'll be through this one in a moment.
The gallery. The trapdoor in the gallery is metal.
Good. Come on. We made it. We lay across the trapdoor, exhausted. While below us, the rats took over the entire tower. I could hear them howling and fighting over our food supply, our water, our leather, and all about us. The others screamed and glared in at us, swayed in a tangled mass, hypnotized by the ever-turning light. By morning, the air in the little room was horrible. Until now, we've been getting air from the tower below. Now that was sealed off. So all our food and water was too. We lay, exhausted, panting, waiting. The hours crawled on. I was almost dozing from fatigue when I saw a light that brought me to, fast.
Would you like to come in, my beauties? Would you? I hold the powers of life and death. I can let you in.
A goose was standing by the clasp, and in one hand he held a wren. He was tapping the glass gently, not quite hard enough to break it. I eased myself to my feet and slowly, very slowly, tiptoed toward him.
All I have to do is tap just a little harder.
I leapt at Auguste and tackled him and knocked him unconscious. I found a coil of wire in the toolkit and trussed him up, fastening him to a stanchion in the center of the room. Louis was of no help. He lay on his side looking at his bloody hand, weak and sick as a baby. So there I was, a lunatic and a coward for company, and all about, watching our little drama, the rats. The day dragged by. The supply boat wasn't due for another 12 days. I don't know what they could have done if they had come. We had only one way of summoning them, and that was to shoot off the distress rockets. But the rockets were four floors below. And even if they'd been right there in the gallery, I couldn't have opened a window to fire them. At night, I tended the light, but its flame was devouring our oxygen. The following day, we lay, thirst-tormented, starving, waiting. And the following night, I again tended the light, but the small supply of spare wicking we kept in the gallery had become exhausted, and quite suddenly, about midnight, the light went out. Nothing I could do. The wicks were stored three levels below. Nothing I could do. Nothing. From time to time, I'd strike a match to see the clock. And when I did, it lit up the million red eyes about us. All about. Watching. Waiting. Below, it had grown quiet. They cleaned us out, and now they too were waiting. All waiting. And then the rats, quite suddenly, were silent. And then I heard it. And then I saw the sky and the stars. The rats were gone. I went to the glass. Out there in the water, a small freighter, banana boat, showing a few lights, came softly and innocently at us. The light was out. They didn't know. I wanted to open the windows to call out to them, to warn them somehow, but I was afraid. What if the rats were hiding from me, tricking me? So I waited. They She grounded very softly in a brief not 200 yards from the key. Grounded so gently that the man playing the trumpet, was he a passenger or a crewman on watch, didn't even stop playing. They tried washing her back off. I could have told them to save their fuel. The tide was rising, would have floated her free. And I waited. That's all. That's the story. The sun came up and there wasn't a rat on the whole quay. Every last one of that terrible army had left us gone back to sea on their new ship. Auguste, insane asylum. He never recovered. Louis, they took him into Cayenne where he died of blood poisoning from his bite. Yes, well, that's the whole of it. And if you'll excuse me now, I must go set my traps. No, mouse traps. No rats in this lighthouse, I should say not. Life in the lights isn't bad. But sometimes, when I see a strange vessel approaching, I get a little nervous, sure. Somewhere on the seas, there's a little banana boat without a crew. That is, without a human crew.
And is it almost time for lunch? Are you ready to be lunch? Today's show was adapted by Steve Brown and Mike Ostrup. In Three Skeleton Key as Jean, Andrew Potter, playing Auguste, Jim McClure, and Louis was played by Larry Rowe. Today's show was directed by Steve Brown. This has been Sorry Wrong Number and Three Skeleton Key, both shows adapted by Steve Brown and Mike Ostrup, and our stars are from the 91.1 Players. Our production crew today, Mike Ostrup with live sound effects. Our chief engineer, Dave Janzer. Our chief audio engineer, Chuck Janzer. And I'm your host, Steve Brown. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah Dume Dunn and McTernan of Kenosha, and also Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin, and the Brown Ostrup Performing Arts Foundation in Salem, Wisconsin. For the WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center offers no-cost, unbiased Medicare workshops for those new to Medicare or who want to learn more. For more information, contact 262-605-6652.
I'm Gregory Berg, and on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, we're going to talk about something that is commonplace and yet not very often talked about openly, estrangement between siblings. My guest is Illinois author Fern Schumer Chapman, who has written about this in very sensitive fashion in a book called Brothers, Sisters, Strangers, Sibling Estrangement and the Road to Reconciliation. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.